You know, there are these great questions that kind of just fall like a fog onto us of, you know, how does what makes dough rise, or how does your morning coffee give you a morning boost, or why does your shampoo sometimes make your hair look greasy? You know, the real issues of our day. And the answer, of course, is chemistry. So we have to think more about that. And from the moment we wake up until the time we go to sleep, and even, quite frankly, while we're asleep, chemistry is at work. It doesn't have to take a PhD in science to understand it. Dr. Kate, and Kate, is it Bieberdorf? Am I right on the last name?
Bieberdorf, very close.
Bieberdorf. No, okay. I was looking. I thought it would be Bieberdorf, and then I didn't see the E, as in like Justin, and then So I excluded it. But Bieberdorf. but you're better known as Kate the chemist, right?
I am. Yes. It's easier to say. I married into Bieberdorf, so I understand it. Yeah, it's a mouthful.
You married a Bieberdorf, so forever known as Kate the chemist. Well, you've appeared on TV programs from the Today Show to the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, looking to change the face of chemistry as we know it. A similar goal that she has in her new book, It's Elemental: The Hidden Chemistry in Everything. Kate the Chemist is a scientist and chemistry professor at the University of Texas, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Kate Bieberdorf to the roundtable this morning. Kate, thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's really nice to have you on the program. I thank you very much for your time, and I thank you so much for really making this topic fun and interesting to discuss. So let us go to the origin story, if we can, of what brought you into chemistry. Why did you become interested in chemistry in the first place?
I was actually really fortunate. I had this incredible high school teacher my sophomore year of high school, Mrs. Palsrock, and she would run around the classroom, and she was energetic and excited, and she just brought chemistry to life for me. And honestly, ever since I was 15, I knew I wanted to be a chemist because of that wonderful woman.
Wow. And did you think of at that time, at that young age, of what you could do and what was possible as being a chemist or in knowing about chemistry?
None. Nothing. I just liked the subject. I liked the math behind it, and I liked the fires and the booms. I'm a bit of a pyromaniac at heart. So that's what attracted me to it. And even when I was in graduate school, I still thought I was going to go to industry and make pharmaceuticals and try to, you know, save the world with cancer treatments and whatnot. And a couple years into grad school, I started TAing and teaching, and I just realized that that's where I am supposed to be. I love being in the classroom. I love teaching chemistry because I feel like a translator. I can just take these subjects that are really complicated, and they're difficult to wrap our mind around, like an atom and a proton and neutron. Like, that's hard to visualize. But for whatever reason, I can kind of translate that to 18-year-olds and let them understand what's going on with chemistry so that they can now go save the world. They'll get the Nobel Prize.
Well, that's certainly a wonderful, noble goal, if not Nobel. So when you look at your job, of course, as I mentioned, you are an educator at the chemistry professor at the University of Texas, and also in this book, taking us a look at hidden chemistry. So let's just think of the concept of that, of why so much of chemistry, and really of science, if you will, is hidden.
Well, I think what's interesting is that when we're interacting with anything, right, no matter what it is, if it's your Yeti, your calculator, you're interacting with matter, and that's atoms, that's chemistry. A physicist would argue it's physics, but I'm going to say it's chemistry. So no matter what, if you see it, interact with it, taste it, breathe it, it's chemistry. And so what I've been trying to do with the book is just point out my favorite examples of it. So in the book, I take you guys through the busiest day of the life. So we start with breakfast, then we go through early morning workout. I take y'all to the beach. We make a pie. We go to happy hour. We even talk a little bit about the science of date night. And I just wanted to point out my favorite examples because, like you said, I think a lot of people operate under the impression that they don't really think they're being a scientist. But if you're in the kitchen, if you're cooking, if you're making a pie, you are being a chemist.
And we don't always realize that, meaning that we don't think of it. We think of it as baking a pie. We don't think of it as chemistry in action.
Right, exactly. I mean, I don't know how many people are grabbing their flower and thinking, ooh, look at these amino acids. What cute polypeptides, you know? That's not really what's happening. But I do want people to see that that is. I mean, it's all proteins. It's all you're making bonds, you're breaking bonds. And I think that when you have learned just a little bit about that, I think cooking becomes more fun. I think working out can be more fun if you know what's going on inside your body and why you're, you know, pushing yourself to do more burpees. I think it's more fun to live that way. And I just obviously am biased because I love chemistry and I look at everything through that lens.
You say toward the beginning of the book, I want to get this right. You're talking about a liquid to a solid and you talk about melting. And you say the easiest phase change to start with is melting. I don't know about you, but I learned about melting at a very young age. I was outside eating ice cream, and the hot sun beating down caused the ice cream to drip down my hand. And it was a total mess. So what is happening when things melt?
Ice cream. Well, just like you said, of course, we can talk about ice cream. So when something melts, it's going from the solid phase to the liquid phase. And I'm sure we've all seen an ice cube melt. We've been outside. We've watched things melt. Like, we know this process innately. But what I want to do is, you know, take it from the macro world and dive deeper into the micro world. So what's going on in the molecular level? And so when something goes from a solid to a liquid, for most molecules, there are some exceptions, what's happening is the distance between the molecules is just increasing. So in a solid, you can picture like 1,000 people trapped into a really small room and they're just slammed into each other. They're all on top of each other. They're miserable. You can't move. You're cramped. And then the liquid would be like if you take that room and now all those people are now at a football stadium. So they have a lot more room to move around. The number of atoms are the same. We didn't add or subtract any people, but now we just have more space. We can run around a little bit. There's some movement, and that's why those liquids will flow. We see them move. We know what happens when a liquid drips down your hand if your ice cream is melting. So we can actually see the distance between the atoms increase when the liquid starts to move.
So the Almond Joy ice cream, the molecules are still the exact same molecules while melted. And
exactly.
And the atoms and the distances between the atoms has not changed, but the molecules are the things that are far apart.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just getting larger and larger distances between them. And then when you go from a liquid to a gas, that's even even larger of a change. And so these molecules get as far apart from each other as possible. In the kinetic molecular theory, we assume that the distance between them is so large that the volume of the molecules themselves doesn't even matter. So we just kind of assume that in gases, we are having these atoms are having no attractions, no repulsions. They don't want to be near each other. They don't want to be close to each other, so they just spread out. And so instead of being in a football stadium, now you have the entire state of Texas to just run around and do your thing.
So, and then you need energy to do that, and that can either be if you're melting the ice cream, that would be heat, right? And then other
Correct.
and the opposite of that would be to freeze it or to cold mm-hmm. to make it cold,
to remove heat essentially.
To remove heat.
Mm-hmm.
and then that go ahead.
Well, and these are just very classic thermodynamic changes. And so we're looking at the transfer of heat. And so when we go through certain processes, we need heat in order to make these molecules spread out. So when you go from a solid to a liquid, you add heat. Think about an ice cube, right? You add
right.
heat in order for it to melt, and then it spreads out. If you wanted to take liquid water, think a pot of water, you're going to add heat to it in order for it to vaporize, so for it to boil and go from the liquid to the gas state. So all of those where you add heat to the process, those are all endothermic transitions. The opposite is an exothermic transition. So that's something that gives off heat. So if you've ever stood in front of a fireplace and you felt it get warm, that's exothermic. It's releasing energy, releasing heat, and you can feel that. And so when you go through the opposite of all these physical changes, so gas to liquid, liquid to solid, gas to solid, all of those are exothermic, meaning they're releasing heat because you're going the opposite way. Now we've got all these gas molecules that are all across Texas, and now we have to wrangle them in, smash them together to be a liquid, and then we do the same thing. We have to smash them further, even closer together to become a solid. And when they do that, because they can't run around, because they can't scream and jump and take as much space as they want, you actually lose energy and you become more lethargic and slower.
So, and I apologize for this question, but I'm just endlessly curious now. So what the hell happens with Jell-O?
Okay.
What's going on
okay.
there?
Okay. So Jell-O, by definition would be a solid, right? Because
right.
it actually is like stuck together. It's not, it doesn't drip like a liquid doesn't, it doesn't pour. And so pouring is a really classic example of a liquid. So what we've got there is gelatin. And so there's a molecule in there. If you've ever used sodium citrate in to make mac and cheese or queso or anything, it essentially provides a way for all the different molecules in the substance to bond to each other. And so sometimes you've got lots of fats in maybe a queso or a mac and cheese. Sorry, that's what we make down here, so that's where my brain goes.
Yeah,
we don't
no,
make
that's
jello.
Good. Yeah.
But you've got fats in there, which are nonpolar, and then you've got water, which is polar. And so these two things don't want to mix. We know this. Oil and water don't want to mix. But when you throw something in like gelatin or maybe something like sodium citrate, it allows for these bonds to be formed, and so you get more of a uniform type of solid. And so with jello, it's wiggling around because it's all stuck together instead of relaxing and not bonding.
Got it. Wow, you're really good at this. So let me ask you, you write in the book about things and we'll eventually bring it down to an equation. And sometimes, so when you say things like, and I just had it here, but when you talk about making a cake and it's flour, eggs, sugar, cocoa powder, you know, and then you get the chocolate cake. And then when you bring it down to an equation, well, that's when it starts getting a little confusing, right? I mean, for us mere
sure.
mortals, non-scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it important for us to realize what that equation is? Or why should we know what that equation is?
Sure. So what I'm trying to do in that section is essentially equate a chemical equation, which you probably have all seen if you took a chemistry class. That's just where we're saying A plus B gives us product C. And I'm just trying to equate that with something that we've probably done before, which is to make a chocolate cake. And so instead of saying A plus B equals C, now we can say flour plus sugar equals cake. And we make it more complicated in the book, obviously, to give it a little bit more structure and we build up to it. But the point of it is to just kind of remind people that you're already using these chemical equations in your daily life. If you've ever followed a recipe, that's going through a mechanism, which is a big, complicated chemistry process. But when you break it down, it's just step by step. Each one of those steps is a chemical reaction. So you add your flour, you add your baking powder, then you throw it into the oven, and now that fast-acting acid gets to activate from the baking powder, and it's all chemical reactions over and over and over again. And so in the book, in the very, very beginning, what I have is kind of a Chem 101, this is an atom, this is a molecule, this is a chemical reaction, so
yeah.
You have the basic vocabulary so that it allows me to jump into the meat and the potatoes of what I actually want to talk to you about, which is, you know, what is caffeine? How does that work in your brain during breakfast? And all the fun examples.
You, toward the end of the book, you talk, and you talk about drinking, but you, like, tell us what's going on when you have a hangover. So what is the chemistry of a hangover?
Well, it's very interesting because basically the chemistry of a hangover is quite simple. It's just your body saying that we need water. You've dehydrated yourself. When your kidneys are processing all that ethanol, it's pushing it out, and it pushes out your water as well, in addition to your electrolytes. And so I talk about electrolytes several different times in this book because I used to be a fitness instructor, so I can talk about it in the working out aspect as well. But essentially, a hangover is your body craving water, and you really want to get water back into your system. And so my editor, when I was talking to her about this, she really wanted, like, what's the chemistry trick? How do I get over a hangover? What is it? And I'm like, there's not one, really. You just have to be a responsible adult. Drink water beforehand. Make sure you're drinking water between all your margaritas as well.
Do you need a new editor, Kate? Is everything okay?
No.
Okay, all right.
I love her. No,
all right.
I love her.
All right.
She's just very funny. It was just something of what – it's a question of, like, that I always get, right? We're at a bar and they find out you're a chemist and they're like, well, how do I beat the hangover? I have these pills. Is this real? And I'm like, no, that's placebo. Don't waste your money on that.
And the whole thing has to do with hydration, because when you're drinking, the process of drinking, even though you're taking in liquid or fluid, you are – thereby what that is doing is dehydrating you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because the ethanol comes in, and it's the way it operates in your body. The ethanol is the molecule that makes you get drunk. So when you're making wine or beer, what you're actually doing is taking your sugars. So if you like wine, the sugars come from the grapes themselves. If you're a beer person, that usually comes from a starch, maybe like a barley. But you eventually break them down to these simple sugars, and you convert your sugar into ethanol. And ethanol is the main molecule that gets us drunk. That's why people like drinking usually, as that mood elevates. later. So the big piece is when your kidneys go through and they process the ethanol, it shoots out your electrolytes as well in order to do that. And so usually the next morning, a Gatorade or something like that, a sports drink to refresh yourself can taste absolutely wonderful.
You have everything in here from, you know, as you said, making breakfast to cleaning the house, and it's really all fascinating. And as the subtitle says, the hidden chemistry in everything. And certainly you bring us throughout our day and let us know what's going on in the simplest and most complex of chores. The name of the book is It's Elemental, and it is published by Park Row Books. Kate Bierbedorf is the author of the book, better known as Kate the Chemist. Kate, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. This is really a joy. Have a good one.
And to you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.